Grizzly One.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
Minutes after the hour of 5 on this, your drive home at 5, because once again, Jeff McKay, our traffic director, has indicated another chink in the ever-depreciating system of mass transit run by the MTA, money-taking agency, this time involving the Long Island Railroad. Power outage right downstairs, Penn Station, which means no service from Jamaica Station into Penn Station, which means you get rerouted right first to Woodside, then see if you could get a 7 train that runs on time to bring you into the city. Or you got to take the link that'll get you to Atlantic Avenue and Barclay Station, and then again, fight your way into the city from there on the subway system. It's mishigosh. It's total chaos. And Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, told us this is pretty much what it would be about a month ago.
It will be a summer of hell for commuters.
And today he stood there and declared that we are in a state of emergency.
We need ideas outside the box because, frankly, the box is broken.
Yeah, because you don't know what the hell you're doing. Then he went on to say this.
Just 3 days ago, we literally had a train come off the tracks. It's the perfect metaphor for the dysfunction of the entire system.
Metaphor. You didn't even have the onions to be able to get out of your SUV and go over to 125th Street and see the damage for yourself. You decided you had to get back up to Albany, even though you were already in the city. And then he went on to say this.
The MTA will tell you today it takes 5 years to get a new car. That is just ridiculous. I could build a car in 5 years.
What was it? You can build a car in 5 years. You've been governor for 7 years. Governor for 7 years. You might know about old cars. You might know about vintage cars. But you're going to build a subway car? And you've been governor for 7 years and you just discovered this. What a schmuck. Don't make that a putz. And then he went on to say the following.
Today, I'm asking Joe Loder to do a reorganization plan for the MTA in 30 days. Start with a blank piece of paper. There are no givens. There are no sacred cows. Design an organization that performs the function rather than the organization that exists today, which is just a long-standing bureaucracy that has evolved over time.
Oh, my God. And who's the head of this bureaucracy? That's right, Andrew Evilize Cuomo. And now he's giving his part-time director. That's right, part-time director Joe Loden, whose full-time job is over at the NYU Medical Center, 30 days to get together what he claims it took 50 years to ruin on the line to discuss that. Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. Thanks for jumping on board, Ken.
Good to be here.
Is anybody laughing at him up in Albany for those ridiculous statements he made earlier today?
No, but I think it's a sign that the issue has finally been put on the governor's plate. It's something he tried to avoid. Initially, he was telling, oh, it's not my subway system. I don't control the MTA. I don't have a majority of the board. Well, at the same time, when the second way subway opened, he was out there saying how it was him who got it done and got it done on time. So, you know, I think he realized he can't have it both ways. There was a lot of criticism. I had a column this week, actually, on Wednesday, that basically said that summer of hell for commuters could morph into an electoral train wreck for the governor in 2018 if things don't turn around. And it's a serious issue for him.
Well, again, today, as we speak, down below us in Penn Station, Long Island Railroad service. service no longer existent between Jamaica Station and Penn Station because of power outages. And yet, he seems to be thinking that his Mashiach, Joe Loda, can solve this. And I emphasize this as a part-time director of the MTA. Part-time director.
Yeah, no, he's the chairman of the board, but part-time, and he's going to hire somebody full-time to be the executive director, but, you know, there's going to be a need for a sense of urgency here. This could really explode. I mean, people are angry, and you know, for the governor, you know, why this matters. In 2014, when he won re-election, it was largely because of New York City, you know, voters in New York City, Long Island, and Westchester, and those are the very voters who are commuters, and if they're angry next year and if they're looking for someone to blame, it could really turn against the governor.
Now, today with a special session, he got $1 billion to infuse into the repair system. Is that correct?
No, it's not correct. So that's part of the thing. He has pledged $1 billion that he says he's going to work for in next year's budget. He says it's just a sign of the commitment the state will have, so when Joe Loda is planning on what services needs to be done, he can consider that money. He says, but they would never spend it in the next couple of months, so there was no sign-off for this money.
Now, he did a solid for Mayor de Blasio, so I'm assuming de Blasio didn't match the funds with a $1 billion pledge, right?
No, there was no commitment to that, although the governor has said that the state, that the city really needs to pony up its share, and the counties in the 12-county MTA region have to do the same.
Well, he's right about that, but let me flip the script and go to the favor he did for de Blasio, which is to get mayoral control extended for 2 years. Is that correct?
It is, and 2 years is an interesting time frame, right? Because all we kept hearing for the last week was it would be extended 1 year, 1 year, 1 year. Well, what does a two-year extender do? It gets it past the governor's reelection. So this is not going to be an issue that's on his plate next year.
Now, isn't it interesting that as much as even Flanagan, who stood in opposition as the majority leader of the Republican-led state Senate, said, oh, no, I'm for mayoral control. Democrats said, I'm for mayoral control. Everybody said, oh, no, mayoral control. But in three straight Quinnipiac College polls, people by a majority of 3-1 in the city of New York, many of them with who are parents with kids in the public schools, said no to mayoral control, and specifically to de Blasio leading the effort. Are they dense up there in Albany? Have they not studied those polls?
Well, I think they believe, and the governor said this today, you know, you may not agree with how the mayor is doing, that you may think there's things he can do better, but it's still better than the old system where you not only had a decentralized board of education that the mayor appointed as well as the 5 borough presidents, but you had 32 community boards that the mayor likes to say was full of corruption and graft and patronage. So I think the governor said by any means, in his opinion and in the legislative leader's opinions, mayor control is far better regardless of who's in charge than the old system, because you could always vote out a mayor if that's what you want to do.
I want to go back to the original point the governor made earlier at his emergency press conference today about the plight of the MTA. He said the following thing. I'm going to replay this, Ken.
The MTA will tell you today takes 5 years to get a new car. That is just ridiculous. I could build a car in 5 years.
Now, the governor would never respond to me, Ken, but he will to you. Since he loves, you know, getting under the hood of a vintage car, an old muscle car, and, you know, fooling around with it, and he's good at it. Could you actually ask him if he could build a subway car by himself in less than 5 years, maybe a little bit each day?
Well, he repeated it up here. That's been his standard line. Usually he says 3 to 5 years, but and that's unacceptable. Look, his argument is that it shouldn't take that long to build a subway car. It shouldn't take, you know, 7 years to fix the signal systems per line. He says it would take 40 years to fix the signal system-wide. He wants to look internationally for ideas to speed that up. He says we'll need to find vendors who could speed that up. Look, I think you're going to see the governor. He recognizes now, especially after the derailment and all the criticism of where are you and why aren't you dealing with this, I think you're going to see him at least try and own it. And if things aren't working, then you're going to see him turn on the MTA and start bashing him.
Now, you've seen him over the years, 7 years in office. You notice the tan that he has now? You notice that tan?
out in the sun, apparently.
Yeah, every weekend in the Hamptons over at his brother's place, Chris Cuomo's place, instead of dealing with the MTA. Will you guys start hammering him on that? He's working on his tan instead of working on the MTA.
Well, look, you're starting the drumbeat on it.
Most definitely do appreciate that, Ken. Love it. He is the Albany Bureau Chief for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. And nobody has said, look at this governor. He's got a tan every weekend out in the Hamptons at his brother's Chris place, working on his tan instead of working on the MTA. That's a double oofah to you, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 577 WABC.
She put the lime in the coconut. She drank a bowl up. She put the lime in the coconut.
So confused here on the drive home at 5. So let me see if I can get this straight on my lineup. Straight on my lineup card. Carbs used to be good. Now they're bad. Coffee was bad. Now it's good. Butter was bad, but if you put it in your coffee, it's good. And it goes on and on and on and on. And oh no, they've taken on the sacred cow of coconut oil. There's a whole generation that swore its allegiance to coconut oil. Tell me it ain't so, Bill Ervolino of The Record, great columnist that you are. Tell me it ain't so. The coconut oil now is considered bad.
It seems that way. You know, when I was a kid, my father would bring a coconut home. It would be like a little round, hairy looking, you remember them, you know, looked like Bela Lugosi's head. He'd bring it home. And we'd crack it open. It was a whole thing. We'd all have a little. This coconut costs, like, what, 19 cents? I have a bottle here, coconut oil, organic, virgin. Virgin.
Is that like, is that
$12.
Is that like Bertolli olive oil, second press virgin olive oil?
I don't. It says cold press. So okay, I don't even know what that means. It's like all the virgin coconuts on this side of the room. Whatever they do. And this was a few years ago. They started with the coconut water, which they were selling for $3 for a little thing.
Yep.
Now they're selling this. I happen to like this stuff because you can do just about anything with it. But the American Heart Association now says it's dangerous. Don't make such a big deal. Don't fry in it. It's very high in saturated fats. Now, meanwhile, this came out, like this report came out, like, and the next day. You know, we all know Stephen Hawking, right? Stephen Hawking, like supposedly the smartest person on the planet, not much to look at, but he comes out and says that the Earth is doomed, that we have to move to Mars or move to the moon because the whole world is ending. And I don't know how we're going to get to Mars. I think Jared Kushner is working on that. But we're supposed to, like, worry about the Earth is coming to an end and don't clog your arteries with coconut oil.
That
what are we doing?
Now, Bill, I really know. You said you could almost do everything with coconut oil.
You can.
I've seen your faccia. I've seen your profile in addition to reading your many columns in The Record. You never put the schmear of the coconut oil on your bald head, did you, to see if it could grow hair?
No, I haven't done that. I put it everywhere else. You put it on your elbows. You put it on your nose. You put it on everything. People with hair, I don't have any. They put it on there. You can Simonize the car with it. I put it on the dog. You could do anything with this. When I'm getting a sore throat, that's when I actually ingest it.
Oh,
I don't usually
that reminds
eat.
Me.
I swallow it. It kills everything.
When I was a kid, if you had a sore throat and you were fearful, you get a strep throat, although that would guarantee that you'd be out of school for a few weeks, you know, because it was contagious. Your mom used to send you to the local candy store, Luncheonette, to get the pure Coca-Cola syrup, which you would take for a strep throat. It would knock it out. Naturally, it was a narcotic. Who knew?
Oh, no.
But that now it's considered, oh, my God, you became a cocaine addict. You be beaming yourself up to Scotty smoking rocks of crack if you take Coca-Cola syrup.
Yeah, now you have to go to certain neighborhoods to get your Coca-Cola syrup. But when I do it with the coconut oil, it kills it. And because you know when you're getting a sore throat. You feel it the day before. It's like, uh-oh. Yep. And I swallow it down, and it kills it. And so I swear by this stuff, but I don't eat it. I know a lot of people that will take a spoon. Oh, it's so healthy. They take a spoonful of it every day, or they do all their frying in it. I don't do that.
Let me tell you how devious I was, Bill Ervolino. For my many wives and girlfriends, when I was mad at them and I knew I was coming down with a sore throat, a strep throat, I'd say, you look so good. I just want to lip lock with you right now.
That's evil.
And I would tongue kiss them and make sure they got that infection.
Oh, my God. My virgin coconut is blushing here.
Now, speaking of blushing, you're a paisamoy, Italian. So, naturally, this whole thing about gluten-free, gluten-free. Oh, it's got to be gluten-free.
No, I do gluten-free. That's I do that, and it's made a great I'm one of those people who have that problem with my stomach. And I know people make fun of it the same way they made fun of lactose intolerance. Look, you know if you got a problem or you don't. I mean, if you don't have a problem, you want to eat gluten-free, I don't care what you
do. How did you survive? My father, Chester, born a Polish-American kid in Chicago, was allergic to garlic, and nobody knew that. And you know Italians and Poles, they got to have garlic on everything. So he would blow up like a Zeppelin.
Oh, really? I've heard about that.
So you're an Italian. How did you survive all those years without gluten-free?
I didn't. Well, I ate it. But, I mean, you know, they started screwing around with it in the 70s, and they changed it. And, they, you know, the if you read about the wheat was very high. And so they had an idea, like, if we make it shorter, we can pick it faster or whatever. And this is all true. And they you know, GMO'd it to make it, like, short. I don't know what they mixed it with, probably somebody from my family. And now it's short, and they can pick it, and somehow along the way, it changed.
Does that mean those years when you were eating Ranzoni, Sonoboni, you were retching?
No, I was not. I was fine in those days, and then later on, it just started giving me, I blow up like a, like one of those rafts, you know, that you know, you don't want to open it in a phone booth because it'll take the shatter everything. That's what happened to me, and I would get really, really bad.
I am recommending to you, Bill Everlini, because I know you've tried everything to grow hair on the top of your head. You must take your valued coconut oil before they ban it, before you have to buy it on the black market and smear it on your head. It will grow hair. I guarantee you, Bill.
Are you sure? Are you you're guaranteeing me this?
Please, would you do this for us? Do a FaceTime live of it. We will post it on our website. Bill Ervolino, columnist of the Record, taking the coconut oil. They may soon be banned because it's considered so bad for you.
Well,
before.
Well, you know, those coconuts are pretty hairy. I don't know if you've seen
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Please, Bill Ervolino. We're going to get it. We're going to post it on our website. As he smears it on his head, right? Hey, that's like a multi-billion dollar industry. Any pharmaceutical company that finds the cure for baldness and growing hair, it could well be coconut oil. Well, we'll see if the schmuck, I mean, the putz, I mean, we'll see if Bill actually tries.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
Fight fire with fire. In fact, if you go to the Hill, Sarah Huckabee, who's a White House spokesperson for Donald Trump, was defending him with his recent controversy created by his Twitter rampage this morning versus Mika Brzezinski and Coffee Joe Scarborough of the MSNBC Morning Show. This is what she had to say about how he handled things.
I don't think that it's a surprise to anybody that he fights fire with fire. The things that this show has called him, and not just him, but numerous members of his staff, including myself and many others, are very deeply personal.
On the line to discuss that, Joe Concha. He's the media reporter for The Hill. Thanks for joining us on the Drive Home at 5, Joe.
Hey, Curtis, how are you?
All right, so explain to me how this latest Twitter rampage took place and why the whole world is now focused on Mika and Coffee Joe.
Well, this has been building to a crescendo, Curtis, for a long time, ever since Trump took office. If you remember, Scarborough and Brzezinski, Joe and Mika, were very friendly with Trump during the campaign, for most of it anyway. Trump appeared on the show regularly by phone interview, but then suddenly things went south. And while Joe and Mika were friendly with Trump and gave him a lot of interviews, they were basically ostracized from the media bubble because they were seen as not being tough enough on him. So it seems like what I've seen, at least since the inauguration, is Joe and Mika double and tripling down on personal attacks. Not policy, not strategy, not messaging, but personal attacks on Trump. Scarborough saying that Trump looked like a boy who pooped in his pants actually implied that he had dementia. Mika calling into question Trump's mental state. I could go on and on with tons of examples, calling him a fake president. So I think that Trump kept hearing this and hearing this, and then today Mika made a comment about Trump hiding his hands in a Time magazine cover or a fake one anyway, that he said he had teensy hands and that his staff needed a lobotomy for actually being loyal to him. And he just lost it and said, you know what, that's enough. I'm going to hit them back personally just as badly as I've been hit over these last 6 months.
And so what was the content of the tweet that set off this virtual frenzy?
Well, Trump basically said that on New Year's Eve that Joe and Mika went down to Mar-a-Lago. That's true. They were pictured being there. They said they were there for an interview. And Trump said that he turned them down for an interview and that Mika looked like she just got a facelift, and she was actually bleeding as a result of that facelift. It kind of brings you back to the Megyn Kelly comments that he made in 2015, saying that she was bleeding from her wherever when she posed that debate question that caused so much controversy among Trump supporters. So that was it, that he made a reference to her looks. God knows that Joe and Mika have done that before with Trump, and that's what set off this firestorm where now everybody is jumping to Mika's defense.
I know, but
including GOP members.
But Joe, obviously I see how this benefits Mika and Joe because they get more attention.
Yeah.
But Trump is the president. He gets incredible attention from all over the world. This cannot put him in a good light.
Oh, no, Curtis, I'm not defending it. I was just giving you the play-by-play.
Sure.
If I give you the color commentary now, I've been saying for a while that he needs either a Twitter advisor, where he sends something, puts it in a draft, and just has somebody look it over, somebody he really trusts, and say, yeah, you know, Donald, I think when I look at this probably isn't a good idea. If you want to hit Joe and Mika, hit him for ratings, hit him for this, hit him for that, but don't go after her looks because it's going to result in X, Y, Z. Or he just needs to stop tweeting altogether. But his supporters will tell you, well, that's the way he fights back against a corrupt media, by going directly to people. But, you know, at 71 years old, Donald Trump should have some self-restraint by now, and he simply has shown time and time and time again that he doesn't. And as a result, Curtis, he steps on good news for whether it be the economy, a deal he made with Mexico today in terms of sugar. He steps on it because of these stupid personal attacks that go back and forth between him and other media members.
Now, I know that his staff must be perplexed. Do you know from the inner workings of the White House, since there are leaks galore there, has anybody ever stepped up to the president and said, Mr. President, at least in the hours of 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. in the morning, could we install Chinese finger traps on you?
That's a great solution. Yeah, look, he's like, you're a sports guy too, Curtis, I'm sure. He's like a quarterback that's always out in front of his offensive line that should be blocking for him. His communication staff should be blocking for him, and he's behind that. Instead, he's always out and running, and they're always trying to catch up to him and say, Mr. President, we didn't even know this was coming. And then they got to defend themselves, and it dominates news cycles when, again, Trump's doing several good things in terms of economy. You can make an argument with, which is the number one thing out there right now that voters vote on, and yet we just keep hearing about his tweets, and it's a distraction, but I don't think he's ever going to learn. I think he does what he does, and no one can tell him otherwise.
Well, do appreciate that, Joe Concha. He's the media reporter from The Hill, and I don't know what this obsession is that Trump has about women bleeding. I don't know, maybe the household he grew up in, the Trump household in the Forest Hills, Jamaica States, maybe the Presbyterian way, although I doubt it was, you know, that you're unclean, you know, that time of the month when women have blood. But I don't think so. You know, that's more in the Orthodox community, but not at Presbyterian. It's an obsession about this. Knock it off, Mr. President. Please, knock it off. Either that or somebody's got to put Chinese finger traps on him between the hours of 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. when most of these Twitter rampages take place.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
Double trouble in the Jewish Orthodox community. Let's take you first down to Lakewood in New Jersey. And this is just the tip of the iceberg, and I've seen this coming for a long, long time, and I've told many in the Orthodox Jewish community, your day's going to come. You can no longer hide the indiscretions of some in your community. And this came about with the arrests of a Lakewood rabbi, his wife, and several others just this past Monday. And it's just the first wave of a federal and state crackdown on public assistance fraud in the Orthodox community. Because, you know, there are a lot of guys, they say all they do all day is they daven and they study Torah and Talmud. Yeah, right. Okay, sure. And their families are on welfare. The meantime, there are some who don't even qualify for welfare who are bilking it. And the second wave, I think, actually came earlier today. I'm not sure, but I think there were a series of raids when authorities started to move on three other couples. And after that, warrants are going to be served to an unknown number of others that'll take place actually tomorrow. I know it's right before Chavez, right before sundown, right before you stir the Chavez chicken for the Sabbath. And the investigation is growing, and it's going to continue. And it's not just in Lakewood in New Jersey, because if you had followed the scrutiny that's been applied to Lakewood, the town has been making all kinds of headlines. Money laundering indictments against members of the Orthodox community. A school system in financial freefall. Unabated development. And now charges that I know have existed for years of welfare fraud. And when I say it's not just limited to Lakewood in New Jersey, all I got to do is take you up to Curious Joel, up in Orange County in Monroe Township, a Satmar community, where 90% of the people are on assistance. It is the poorest community in America, per capita, per person. Can you believe that? Poorer than some areas in which you got oxy freaks, right, in Kentucky and West Virginia. Poorer than some of those areas that Trump described, where the miners haven't found work in a month of Sundays, and they're either strung out on heroin, oxy, or they just spent two, three generations on public assistance. Except up in Curious Joel, the response is, oh, it has to do with us, again, studying, davening all day, Torah and Talmud. In the meantime, the families are on welfare. And some have built the system. And many have taken advantage of the Pell Grants to run their religious schools. And it's not just up in Orange County. It's not just over in New Jersey. I take you over to the community that was made most famous by the talking fish. That's right. They actually believe that in one of the fish stores in the town of New Square, in Spring Valley in Rockland County, they had a talking fish. Now, if you want to believe you had a talking fish, a gefilte fish, hey, go ahead. See if the white fish, the gefilte fish, was talking to you. But there also a history of all kinds of abuses of welfare fraud. And the reason these communities have gotten away with it is because the local politicians have had window shades on their eyes, cotton balls in their ears, and a zipper on their mouth. And you may say, why? Most of those political officials, they're not Jewish. They're certainly not Orthodox. They're Gentiles. Because these communities vote as a bloc. They follow their Mashiachs. They follow their rabbis, their rebbes. You know, every second guy in that community is a self-appointed rabbi. And if all of a sudden the big mockers in their community say to everyone of voting age, you will vote for Hillary Rodham Clinton in New Square, they go all the way to Washington, D.C. and at the time make a deal with then-President Bill Clinton. Yep. Not unique. Up in Curious Joel in Orange County, the same thing takes place. In Lakewood, the same thing takes place. In Williamsburg, the same thing takes place. Crown Heights, the same thing takes place. Borough Park, the same thing takes place. I'm just a messenger here, Paul Revere. This is the first of a wave of indictments and crackdowns to come, and it's about time because the abuse has been flagrant and politicians have been covering it up for years just to get the votes in one huge block.